as worldwide cases climb above 32 million and the World Health Organization predicts that there could be 2 million deaths, the reality is hitting home that COVID-19 is a long-term problem. So how do we best manage it? Dr. Mark Osterholm is director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, and he's on the line. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Well, last time we spoke, we were just beginning to reopen our schools for students up to the age of 18. The virus was low, but starting up again. Now we have seen some sharp rises in our cities, just as our colleges start to reopen, mostly online, but with some labs and tutorials taking place in person. What can we expect now as this group of people start to move about?
Well, I'm sure as you have seen here in the United States, where we've seen major increases in cases associated with students attending colleges and universities, you're probably going to see the exact same thing. These are individuals who at their age are very interested in socializing. No matter how many warnings you put out about large crowds getting together, they tend to do that. And this has surely added to the transmission considerations here in the United States.
I suppose many youngsters really feel fatigued by the whole thing and they feel robbed of the opportunity to do what they should be doing at this time of life. And some may actually be thinking, well, I'll just expose myself to the virus and develop immunity so I can get on with life. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, first of all, it's understandable what you just said. You know, you have to think of what is going through the mind of an 18 to 22-year-old, and particularly after given what's happened over the past several months. But at the same time, you want to remind them of the following. Number one, there are still younger adults who get seriously ill with this disease and die. The number is surely lower than we see for older populations, but it happens. They spend time in intensive care units. We have today an increasing number of young adults who are overweight, who have what we call high body mass indexes. These people are surely at increased risk for serious disease, and so they need to keep that in mind. But the second thing that I think is also very important for them to understand, we're beginning to see the emergence of a condition we're calling long haulers. These are younger adults primarily, although some older, but primarily younger adults, who often will have the infection, go through a week or two of mild illness, or even in some cases almost asymptomatic illness, and then by week three or four start feeling very severe fatigue, which then leads to, in some cases, difficulty breathing. When these patients are further evaluated, they have surely have changes in their heart activity, also in their lungs. And a number of these individuals are experiencing a severe chronic fatigue syndrome-like picture where they literally aren't able to leave their homes. They're basically on bed rest, not able to function normally. And this may be as high as 10 to 20% of the people who are infected. So this is not an insignificant or an infrequent event. So I just tell them, you don't want to get infected with this virus. The goal should be not getting infected until that time we have a vaccine that they can get vaccinated with. And at that time, develop their immunity that way. Don't try to risk it developing through a natural infection. And then finally, I would just say, if they are infected as young adults, they sure serve to transmit the virus in the community. We have far too many examples where young adults have brought it home to older parents and grandparents who have subsequently become ill and died. And so the likelihood that they can transmit this to others in the community is very high. Another reason why they don't want to be responsible for one of their loved ones becoming infected and dying.
And Dr. Osterholm, I suppose a vaccine is seen by many as the cavalry that will come over the hill and save us all. But should we be pinning any hopes on having this next year?
We're going to have vaccine. I feel confident in that. How well it works is still going to be a question. You know, well, how long will it last in terms of the protection? What percentage of the people who get vaccinated will be protected? I think these are all still questions that we have. But I'm convinced we will have a vaccine. It will be safe, and it will be effective at least for many. And the challenge now is when will that come and how much vaccine will be available over what period of time. I think for many of the high-income countries, unfortunately for the rest of the world, of course, but for many of the high-income countries, we will see by the third quarter of next year, stocks of vaccine that will mean that you can vaccinate a lot of the people in these populations.
Now, here in Ireland, we haven't had the manpower to date to trace the source of all cases, so a lot of it is unknown community transmission. How important is it to be able to trace back where somebody got the virus?
Well, I think to, first of all, educate the public about what's happening. It is very important to do that because then you can give them an actual picture of what's occurring in your community. For example, in our state of Minnesota here in the United States with 5.5 million people, we've been able to demonstrate that weddings and funerals and going to restaurants and bars, family events as such, are major sources of transmission, things that people hadn't thought of. Going to church, indoor church right now, another situation where transmissions occurred. So it is important from that standpoint. But the second thing is often then it allows you to give people the information to know that they've been exposed so that they can isolate themselves during the time period that they might be coming down with the infection and transmitting to others.
Yeah.
So it is important.
Right. And one of the things that we're being told here is to half your contacts. That's that being the most important thing. But you also say that indoor air is extremely important.
Yes, indoor air is a situation where because the circulation is not the same as outdoors, the virus can actually just concentrate in a room. If you were here in this room that I'm in right now speaking to you on the phone, I'm creating this whole set of aerosols. It's these very small, tiny particles that float in the air that you don't see, but that surely contain the virus. If you want to understand an aerosol, think about the next time you're in a department store and you're four aisles away from the perfume section, you can still smell it. Mm-hmm. Or you're walking down the street and suddenly you smell cigarette smoke, and there you look up in front of you, 30 feet in front of you, is somebody walking and smoking a cigarette. Those are aerosols. When you're indoors, they concentrate in that room, and the air circulation often is insufficient to remove them quick enough. Or if you're outdoors, the air dissipates that, the movement of air, much more quickly. So outdoors is not 100% safe, but it's much, much safer than air indoors. And, of course, we all know what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere. Minnesota and Ireland are both going to be experiencing colder days and colder nights coming down the road here. And we know that that means more people will be indoors. That's also an issue of things like bars and restaurants, because there you're often talking loudly, which then actually puts more virus out. It's indoor air, and that's why we look at those as major sources for transmission in terms of day-to-day activity.
Okay, Dr. Mike Osterholm, we have to leave it there. Director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, thank you so much for joining us.